My name is Grace Dias and I'm one third of Theatre Club.
My name is Shane Byrne and I'm another third of Theatre Club. And who's not with us today is Dearan Cody, who is the final third.
The three of us all met in Dublin New Theatre, where we worked with such people as Sarah Fitzgibbon, Willie White, Broken Talkers.
David Horan would have been another one. And then kind of a lot of actors and practitioners like Deirdre Roycroft or Alan King, for example.
Jason Byrne.
Yeah.
And around the time that we were there, the work became very experimental because Willie White took over as artistic director.
And Willie was artistic director as well of Project Arts Centre. We spent a lot of time going to Project and going to see all the different kinds of shows. So we were seeing companies like Force Entertainment, Gob Squad from Germany and New York City Players from New York City.
Everything I know about producing now I would have learned in Dublin New Theatre. So marketing, press, budgets, all this kind of thing we learned. And also we learned a very healthy amount of common sense from having to do kind of big things on small budgets and in small amounts of time. But also we learned an awful lot about ourselves and we learned about how to fulfil our biggest potential, I suppose, is what the big thing that DYT kind of drilled into us.
In Dublin New Theatre, I suppose it's important to mention that it's not just a place for acting. It's not like an acting school that young people go to. It's really a place for a whole immersion into what it is to be a theatre practitioner. So while we were in there, we found ourselves not only performing in shows and acting in shows, we were able to write our own shows, direct our own shows, devise new pieces if we wanted, and operated the lights, operated the sound, picked our own soundtracks. And that kind of gave us the flavour of what it's like to do everything and be kind of the masters of everything that's going on and keeping a huge amount of work going on at once and you being the person who's propelling all that.
When we left DYT, we decided that we wanted to start a company together. And so when we left, we started a company called Theatre Club.
And when we set up Theatre Club originally, it was November 2008, after having done the Fringe, Dublin Fringe Festival with a piece called We're Not Real. And after doing that, we decided we wanted to make theatre that for the goal was, and it sounds very idealistic, but it's still something that we keep, even though we're a bit older and wiser, is that we want to make theatre that changes the world. Not necessarily saves it. What we've learned now is that it's what the theatre we wanted to make was to start conversations that will have a ripple of incremental change in society and change the culture that we live in.
And I suppose over the last 4 years since then, our kind of vision has evolved in that what we're about, I suppose, is creating work that's of high quality and high standard, that's provoking people to think about issues in our world today. So we've made work about suicide, we've made work about heroin addiction, we've made work about family poverty, we've made work about sexuality, pretty much about everything that we feel is of consequence that our society needs to talk about. And we not only make the work in that sense, but we also will design the audience for that work. So when we started the company, we were noticing that we were going to see all these amazing performances and that the audiences weren't there for it, and we wanted to change that. So from the beginning of the company, we've always put as much work into getting the right audience there as we have into actually creating the work. Our marketing campaigns are accessible. We do viral marketing, we do video marketing, we speak in language that people understand. There's no art speak here, but that's kind of the minimal kind of level of thing that we do. What we really do is we go and we meet our audience by the hand. So we do that by going into workshop. We do workshops with community groups. We talk to everyone that we possibly can about the theatre, and that's, I suppose, to make sure that the people who haven't gotten the opportunity to engage with the art form before, for whatever reason, are getting the opportunity to engage with it now.
So our first shows that we did two at once in Dublin Fringe Festival. The first one was called Rough, and another one was that Grace and I made together called Group Therapy for One. And it was about me, myself, my problems, my fears and my feelings. And we staged it rather unusually, but very common for the Fringe, somewhere mad. We staged it in my own family home, so in my parents' house. And the audience came on a bus, the 54A, brought by Grace and a few others, took them on the bus out to my house in Harold's Cross. When they got there, it was to listen to me talk about myself. And it was billed as a group therapy session for one person. But really, it was me talking about things that were very, very common for people in their 20s, that things that they would struggle with. So, for example, things like having trouble meeting new people and small talk and those kind of issues. The pressures of kind of social situations, and then also taking on new things like having to manage your own life and having to be kind of in charge of yourself and keep your own deadlines and not be held by the hand anymore. You're an adult now and you have to deal with it yourself, and suddenly being thrown into that world. The idea was, rather than actually just to be self-indulgent and chat about myself for a while, it was to show people that I think that young men should speak more openly about themselves, and it was to show them that it's actually much easier to do than you think, and it doesn't have to be, you don't have to bring them to your house and have a whole group therapy session. You can just chat about it with your friend if you want.
So with group therapy, I suppose we were dealing with issues that were very close to us, that we understood very well. Our source material was Shane's own life that we were using, I suppose, to talk about the broader world. But with another one of our pieces, Heroin, we had to go a very different way. We were provoked to make the piece by just kind of living in Dublin and noticing the way that drug users were being treated on our streets, the way they were being ignored, they were being walked past, children being shooed away from them. I was working in Meteor in North Isle Street, and I was working there full time, and all day, every day, the main customers that were coming in to me were people who were using drugs and people who were selling drugs outside the store and buying SIM cards in order to sell drugs. And so I became kind of attached to these people and became kind of talking to them and kind of getting to know about their lives and building up a rapport with them. There was one particular incident where someone that I'd been working with a lot of the time came into me, and there was a kind of a thing where he needed to get a SIM replacement, and I couldn't give it to him because of data protection or something like that. And he got very angry and he eventually spat in my face, and I got very shocked by it, but I just went and kind of got on with my day. But it was the reaction of the other people in the shop to this, and the kind of the instantaneous access that they had to these, to calling him awful names and saying that he should be shot and blah blah blah. And it was, I suppose, the distinction that it was because he was a drug user that they felt they could talk about him like that, whereas if someone else had done something, which is quite a horrible thing to do, but if someone else had done it, they wouldn't have spoken about it like that. So this was kind of the main kind of provocation for us in making Heroin. But obviously I didn't know anything about the situation. I was upset because I was so confused about it more than anything. And so I had to go and talk to people who did know about it. So I went to Rialto Community Drug Team and I spoke to them about I wanted to make this piece. And their advice was that I had to go away and become an expert about it. So we went and kind of worked with the drug team over 2 years, and I did a research process with different drug users and different people involved in the community. And the result of that is Heroin, which is a social history of heroin in Ireland over the last 40 years. What I was really interested in was how did people make the choice to take heroin? So I would kind of ask questions leading up to that. And I heard an awful lot of stories about abuse, physical abuse, sexual abuse, discrimination, poverty. And a big thing that kind of came out of it was that people took drugs because they didn't feel loved. And I wondered about why that was and how to redress that in some way. So the actors who are in the piece, who are Barry O'Connor, Jer Kelly and Lauren Larkin, they don't play drug users and they don't play community activists and they don't play Gardaí. They play themselves, and they play themselves trying to demonstrate that story. But they each kind of take a chunk of the story. What you see when you see the piece is Barry kind of orders Jer and Lauren around the space. And over the course of the 90 minutes of the show, they build a flat, because we found, myself and Darren Cody, who designed the piece, found that design and the housing that people were given was such a huge influence over the situation and how it had come about. So there's a kind of a paint by numbers situation where they bring on all the furnishings of a flat in a complex like Fadman Mansions or Dauphin House or Michael's Estate or wherever. And then throughout that you see Barry ordering Jer and Lauren to do different things, and it kind of, I suppose, Barry kind of represents society or the kind of authority or someone trying to tell this story. And Jer takes on the representation of the addict in the situation. So you see the journey of Jer's of addiction through Jer. So he represents that journey. So he starts off, you see him injecting, you see all the different things. And then Lauren takes on the role of women in that situation. So she plays the mother, she plays the activist, she plays the daughter, she plays everything. And she also plays, she uses a book called Dying to Survive by Rachel Keogh, who people might know from a few years ago. She was, her heroin addiction had reached a point where her arms were going to be amputated if she didn't get some help. And Rachel very kindly came on board as a collaborator on the project, and she's now a good friend of us and of the company. And we used her book in the show, and Lauren reads excerpts from her book as a kind of a way of explaining how different it is for women. So I suppose the prostitution, the different vulnerabilities that are at play there. So that's kind of what you'll see. That's kind of how we made drama out of it, I suppose.
I suppose the next show after Heroin would be The Family, which was kind of a continuation on kind of the style of performance of Heroin, but also it was kind of where we really solidified an idea of working with an ensemble of actors. So the same actors from Heroin are all in the show The Family, with a few extra ones too. And The Family is kind of a polemic of the Irish family, so it's every Irish family. It was something we learned along the way, was that families are very, very similar no matter where you are. And really what the show is built around is the idea that, again, comes back to talking, and if the family were able to talk to each other more, they wouldn't have as many problems as they do.
we were all talking about wanting to do this piece about families, and I was looking for a frame of how to present it. And I was on the Abbey Theatre's new playwrights programme at the time, and I had a class with Tom Murphy, and we were talking about the different kind of forms of how you can do things, and we ended up kind of discussing kind of the perceived clash that is not really real, that neither myself nor Tom Murphy thought was real at the time, but between experimental work and traditional narrative based work. And he set me a challenge, which was it would be very interesting to do a piece where you use the traditional narrative of theatre, like, so the tried and tested Greek kind of narrative where it's all in one day and something happens that changes everything and blah blah blah, but to hang the kind of more experimental expressive forms that Shane mentioned on top of that. So that was the challenge that I walked away with, and what we came up with is that the show is set on a Friday. It starts at 6 o'clock in the morning and ends at 12 o'clock at night, and it happens over 90 minutes. And throughout the show, one of the characters tells you what time it is all the time. So they go, it's Friday, it's 6 a.m. and we're 6 minutes into the performance. So it's always drawn the distinction between stage time and real time and all these different things. And it's to take those kind of unities of Aristotelian drama or whatever and to look at that and kind of go, okay, what does that mean when there are no characters and when things aren't, or when the characters are actually personas of the actors themselves, and when we're not denying that we're in a theatre space.
One of the shows we did, it was called 2010, and that was outside kind of the way we've been working normally. We had a text that was actually written for us, but not written by, we didn't commission a writer. We commissioned 1,000 of them. So what we did was, in the year 2010, we put an open call out at the end of 2009 through our Facebook and mailing list and other places, asking people, did they want to play our game called 2010, which would contribute to making a new show in 2011. So every day in 2010, we sent an email, just once a day, to about 50 people signed up originally. And we sent an email every day simply saying, what did you learn today? And their replies came anonymously into a spreadsheet we had. So by the end of the year, we had loads more people signing up and people playing on our website as well. And people would pass it on to their friends when they received the mail. And we ended up with 4,000 of these anonymous responses answering the question what they had learned that day. So we then sat down in 2011 with this massive book that we had, which was thousands of pages long, and tried to figure out how we'd make a show out of this. And in the end, we tried various different ways of trying to think of, could we make it that each day lasts a minute and then the show is this long and all these kind of things. We ended up realising that you have to just present what we were given, was given to us by people in a genuine way. So we'd have to present it to an audience in the best way possible, which was to have actors learn it off and to say it all out loud. So we did it over 7 days. So the first day we performed January, February for 1 hour, and the next day was March, April, and so on, until the final day when we did a 6-hour performance, a marathon we called it, of the whole show, of the whole year of 2010. And it was a very, very interesting project that we did, because we didn't know what we were going to get. We didn't know what was going to come in. And what we learned was that a very interesting thing started to happen, that these people who were replying didn't know each other, but they actually started to talk about things that people were talking about, a lot of the same things. So sometimes it would be big events in the news, but also things like the emotional mood of the piece actually was dictated by what was given to us. The shows were themed by the people themselves speaking about the same, feeling the same things at the same time.
We didn't know that, I suppose, it was going to be such a big year in our history, and 2010 was the year of the IMF. And so it was really amazing to see kind of by that stage, because it was in kind of November, and we started to see kind of people responding in loads of different ways to this crisis. And by that stage, we had lots of different players as well. So we had a really diverse amount of people playing. And other things people talked about was like the snow at the top of the year and the end of the year, which was amazing for a theatre piece, where we could open it with snow and end it with snow. People talked an awful lot about boyfriends, girlfriends, food, drink, hangovers, money. And the big thing, I suppose, you were just kind of getting to there about feeling alone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that people would talk about how alone they felt was a really very common theme, like, and just the idea that people were so invested in this email they're receiving every day, this kind of faceless email.
We think that the theatre is the form that we need to have now to talk about what's happening in our society. It's a public place where society meets itself. It's probably the only space like that that we can name now. You have things like the internet and you have things like radio phone-ins and stuff like that, but there's not the same kind of immediacy as the liveness of sitting next to somebody in a theatre space who you don't know, who's a stranger, who might be affected by the issues that you're looking at on the stage, and then having the opportunity to actually speak to that person afterwards. And that's something that we encourage in all of our shows. I suppose people would ask us, who's coming to your work? If you meet someone who you were in school with, perhaps, who says, like, you know, theatre, no one goes to that. Our answer would be that actually a lot of people come to our work. We've had ridiculous success in terms of ticket sales. Our average kind of capacity of people who come is 85%. We do really well at getting people in, and I suppose how we do that is, as we've mentioned earlier on, going to meet people, going to ask people to come. We have to put an awful lot of work into it, but we're glad to do it.